Our next talk is sponsored by Country Hills Eye Center. Is there anyone here from Country Hills Eye Center? And if so, could you stand? Maybe our only one is Dr. Dastrup, who's given our talk. If we could give a round of applause for Country Hills Eye Center for sponsoring this. So Dr. Travis Dastrup is relatively new to our community. He specializes in corneal transplants, anterior segment surgery, cataract surgery, LASIK surgery, as well as doing general ophthalmology. He began his practice in Ogden in 2010. Dr. Dastrup graduated from Brigham Young University as a music major and graduated from Columbia University Medical School. He completed his ophthalmology residency at Indiana University and a cornea and refractive surgery fellowship at Minnesota University. Dr. Dastrup enjoys spending time with his five children and playing the viola. So please welcome Dr. Dastrup.
Can you hear me on that mic? Thanks for the invitation to speak. Excited to be here with you this morning. My partners give me a hard time. They say, cornea specialist, you're just a window doctor. Rather than fight it, I've just gone ahead and owned it. So I'm a window doctor. We're going to talk Windows 2016 update. What's new in cornea? No financial interest. So this is old school window doctoring. What used to be done is a full thickness transplant. This is what we call open sky. This is the dread moment for the anesthesiologist and the cornea surgeon when the lid is off of the eye. Literally, the anterior chamber is completely collapsed in this patient. You see a little bit of host tissue still here, and you're lifting off here the patient's cornea. In this case, it's for an infection. And corneal transplants saw significant development under Ramon Castroviejo in the 30s and 40s. There were a few changes over the next 60 years. Better suture material made a difference. The operating microscopes got a little better. Our understanding of anesthesia during surgery got a little better. But by the year 2000, almost all corneal transplants were still full thickness corneal transplants. And in fact, I've seen a 50-year-old graft of Ramon Castroviejo's that was still clear, and there wasn't that much difference between what he was doing and then what was done just a few years ago. So the new paradigm, though, I have to quote somebody from the Carter administration, T. Burt Lance, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. In other words, now we're trying really hard to replace only the layers of the cornea that are diseased. So if you have healthy layers, we try to leave them as much as possible. So the two surgeries I'm going to focus the most on today are called DESAKE and DEMEC, or decemase stripping automated endothelial keratoplasty and decemase membrane endothelial keratoplasty. There's another procedure that I'll touch on briefly, DALK, or deep anterior lamellar keratoplasty, where we replace the outer layers. So DESAKE and DEMEC, we replace the inner cornea, and in DALK, we replace the outer cornea. So endothelial replacement surgery. This is where I was lucky enough to live during medical school. It was a really gorgeous view up in, these are called the towers at Columbia University. We had a great kind of downtown view in Manhattan. And I was sitting right in this building in a journal club in 2004. And some of the great minds of the area were gathered together debating a new article that had come out. And they said, this endothelial replacement is rubbish. It will never catch on. There were two surgeons doing it, Garrett Mellis in Europe, and Mark Terry had started to do some of it in Oregon. And they just said, this isn't going to become mainstream. It's too hard to do. And there's too much. The endothelium is shockingly fragile. Doug can attest to this. Cataract surgeons know, boy, you cannot do much to the endothelium. It's very easy to damage. You don't want to touch it. You don't want to do anything to it. By 5 years later, this was considered the standard of care by 2009. That was how big of a shift between 04 and 09 that the American Academy of Ophthalmology said this is, so PKP is the full thickness, the DESAKE was the endothelial surgery was superior. So a few basics. The corneal endothelium, the inner layer that's right against the aqueous, what's its main function? To pump fluid out of the cornea. Why do we need to have fluid pumped out of the cornea? If we look here at the model of the eye, the cornea here, you have aqueous right behind it. Now, I have all these dry eye patients. Well, why would the cornea need to have fluid pumped out of it? Well, that's the tear film on the surface. But the fluid from behind, actually, the cornea needs to get nourishment. It has no blood vessels. So the aqueous actually is important for the metabolic demands of the cornea. And it will swell if it doesn't actively have fluid pumped out of it continuously. So what does a cornea look like? This is what happens to the cornea. This is a blister, a nice bulla there. It actually looks a little more clear. You can see the corneal light reflex is very dull and kind of broken up. You can see these folds in the cornea, and it's just really hazy and doesn't see well. This cornea would, if everything else in the eye was normal, this patient would be legally blind just from this corneal edema, in addition to having significant pain from these blisters that form. So the most common cause today of needing to replace the endothelium is a dominantly inherited condition called Fuchs dystrophy. Normal endothelial cell layers, it's a monolayer of cells, but it's continuous. In Fuchs, you see these little bumps called guttae, which comes from drop. And if you look at these little drops or guttae or bumps, they're trying to fill in the spaces. Humans lose endothelial cells every year in their cornea. There's no regeneration whatsoever. They spread. So if you have a small insult, they'll just spread out to fill the gaps. But if you have too many that die out, you just lay down additional basement membrane to fill in the gaps. So that's decimase membrane trying to make up the difference. But it doesn't pump. And so you can have a few of those, but eventually that degrades vision. Other causes, the number one cause for many years was iatrogenic from cataract surgery. So early cataract surgery caused a lot of corneal damage. It's unusual that I now do a transplant of any kind for somebody just due to a problem with cataract surgery. Cataract surgeons have improved that much. Occasionally, I still will. More typically, it's a patient that has this disease, but it's mild and they're not sure if they'll make it through surgery or not, and cataract surgery tips them over the edge. But normally, we don't do that anymore, but for years there were a lot of transplants done for that. So what else can you do? Hypertonic saline, yes, osmotic agents work, but just a little bit. It's, you know, you're kind of spooning out a little bit of the ocean. It really doesn't do enough for you. And we'll try that, but it usually doesn't work. So in the 20th century, surgery was delayed as long as possible because corneal transplantation was risky and the recovery was slow, and we'll talk more about why. Now we're considering it much earlier for these patients. So what's wrong with the old school transplants? We still have to do them sometimes. This is a patient that I transplanted, I think, January or February. A photograph, his cornea looks nice. There's a nice corneal light reflex, and you see, you know, my preferred suturing is interrupted with the running because then I can adjust the shape. And you know, when they go well, they do well. He's seeing well. He's happy. This is the dread complication of corneal specialists, an expulsive hemorrhage. And it's as bad as it looks, and it's as bad as it sounds. We usually use 10-0 nylon. The surgeon, it looks like, got one suture. And this probably happened intra-op just based on the suture pattern. And then you see these, 6-0 nylon sutures without even having knots buried. I mean, 6-0 nylon seems giant to us, you know. I can't imagine. Or silk. I'm sorry. I think they even put silk sutures in. You're just trying to get the lid on the eye. When a choroidal vessel ruptures and it's trying to push everything out of that open sky cornea, those eyes can be lost. Gratefully, advancements in our understanding of anesthesia for a transplant, trying to keep the patient still. I actually have them hyperventilated to a PCO2 of 28. If the anesthesiologist is okay with that, you know, I communicate well with the anesthesiologist so the patient doesn't buck during surgery. Frankly, if they buck while the patient's open sky, you can lose it. And so fortunately, this is very rare intraoperatively now. But anybody you talk to, the old school surgeons who were doing a lot of transplants in the heyday of anybody who's done 25 years of transplants will tell you they've had at least one or two cases where this happened on the table. I see this now still, though, in trauma. We had an 80-year-old, and this is minor trauma, walking in his driveway, tripped, hit his eye, and ruptured his graft. And the cornea is forever weaker when you do a full-thickness transplant. It is never as strong in most patients. The wound strength is variable. Graft rejection. So this cornea is very hazy. The endothelium is usually what's damaged when the graft rejects. Irregular astigmatism, and this is a little tricky sometimes to explain to patients, but the corneal shape either needs to be fairly round or fairly cylindrical. So if your astigmatism is symmetric, so this isn't. This I call kind of a Mercedes-Benz topography because you have like these three prongs. There's no way to fix that with glasses. You can't. We can align a cylindrical lens, but we have to know what axis to put it at. Which of those axes do you pick? There's really no way to correct that. So, and you know, no matter how hard you try to make your sutures perfect in surgery, as the patient heals, they get a little fibrosis in one area, or another suture kind of tightens up. You know, every single blink, the cornea is very dynamic. It's shaped with blinking, and these sutures just change over time. So you can have somebody day one you're thrilled about, and then 6 to 12 months their sutures start coming out, and then they end up with astigmatism. And so, paper after paper after paper, we're all trying to improve the postoperative astigmatism. I tell my patients, if you have little astigmatism after your transplant, I take full credit. If you have a lot of irregular astigmatism, it's your fault, you healed wrong. No, kidding aside, there really isn't as much control over it as we'd like. You know, it's a significant challenge. Took 12 to 18 months for full recovery, and most patients need a hard contact. Think of it as a prosthetic new surface to the cornea because of the irregularity. And many, many of these patients are 20/20, so I'm not saying it's terrible if there's no other option. I mean, once you get their hard contact on, then they can see. You know, our cataract patients are so fun because the next day you get this wow. Well, an old school transplant, it's 12 to 18 months, and then the contact lens fitting technician gets the wow. But it comes, and these people can see great for years, and it's life-changing for them. However, if we can avoid the large wound, we like to. So the two types of endothelial keratoplasty, Desaque and Demec. The one that was being debated in 04, you remove the endothelium and decimase, just that thin layer you strip off, and you replace it with 100 to 150 micron graft. Now, decimase and endothelium are only 15 microns, so you've used essentially another anywhere from 80 to 150 microns of carrier tissue. You have some additional stroma that you transplanted with it. Demec, literally are just transplanting decimase and endothelium, no stroma. So it's like transplanting a tiny little piece of saran wrap with delicate cells stuck to one side that you can't touch. So this is a cartoon drawing of it. You can see the Desaque graft there has some thickness to it, that colored graft when we put it in. This is one of my patients 2 days after Desaque. And you can see it almost looks like a contact lens when you look at these at the microscope. This donor graft cleared up really quite quickly. Desaque involved a 5 millimeter incision, but it's a tunnel. So you've avoided this large incision. There's literally no sutures through the cornea itself. You float the graft into position with an air bubble, and the patient has to lay flat on their back, and then it takes. And you've just got a few interrupted sutures right there. So, smaller, stronger wound, quicker visual recovery, no need for a hard contact in many patients, and the rejection rate is lower. It's not zero, but it's lower. This has shocked many because for years we were always taught it was the endothelium that was antigenic, that the body was trying to attack the endothelium because that's where we see clumps of white blood cells at the microscope. Turns out that's just where they had the easiest access, and there's actually stromal antigens as well because the less we transplant of the stroma, the less rejection we have. So that's actually a good thing for patients as well. And if it happens to fail, an average transplant lasts 20 years. No matter how careful you are moving the tissue across, the endothelial cells do eventually drop out, and they do sometimes need to be repeated. I can actually do these new endothelial transplants underneath somebody's old full thickness transplant, I'll say, wow, that was so much easier to recover if their transplants have failed. So this just gives you an idea of this, how massive this shift was. Corneal transplants have actually increased, and I think in large part, there are a lot of people, you know, I had a patient that just, when I moved to town, had just let her eye go with Fuchs dystrophy and said, you know what, I'm not going to have a transplant. I drove to Salt Lake and had the other eye done, and it was too much hassle, but then that transplant failed. And she just said, I can't do all this follow-up and everything else. And we did a Desaque on her, and she was able to read and play the piano again and do things that she'd really wanted to do. So there's been an increase in the total number of grafts, but the full thickness penetrating grafts have actually gone down by 7,000, and they've gone from 95% to just barely more than half of the transplants in the year 2014. We don't have any iBank data yet for 2015 as of the time I made this talk. The anterior lamellar that I'm going to touch on briefly still hasn't caught on a lot. We're still only doing a few of those, and I'll talk a little bit about why. Endothelial transplants. In 05, there were 1,400 done in the U.S. It went up to almost 29,000 in 2014. There's been an explosion because the surgery is so much more successful. So, not only did that surgery catch on, it caught on like wildfire, but it is possibly starting to be replaced already. So we're only 5 years into the heyday of DeSake, and DeMek, the new kid on the block, is starting to gain some traction. So 100 to 250 microns. Here there's only 15. That is a much more fragile graft, though. It's shocking when you lift it up how delicate. And we float it on fluid, and I'm going to show you a video in a minute. If you've ever seen a little water ski that can move with the currents of the water, the graft just, if the bowl moves, the graft just darts all over. It is so tiny and fragile. It's remarkable just to handle them and see them. They're so thin. You get almost 100% of your visual recovery by 4 to 6 weeks, and 3 out of 4 patients are 20, 25 or better. We were happy with 20/30 with the DeSake, to be honest. I mean, here we have these years, these people are seeing in glasses or sometimes not even needing glasses, and they didn't have the risk of a conventional transplant. They were getting functional quite quickly in 2 to 4 months. But we have some patients that ended up 20/40 or 20/50. That's functional vision, it's legal driving vision, but it's a little fuzzy and it's not sharp. And some of them are happy and some of them aren't. It sort of depends on their visual needs. And we think the stroma to stroma contact is part of why you get a little haze. You just don't have quite as smooth of an interface, and you get a little bit of haze in those thicker grafts. So the vision is better in DMEC, but it is fussier. And most surgeons weren't doing this 2 years ago because you had to prepare your own tissue. One of the leading advocates around the country was charging $1,000 a surgeon to come watch him do a couple cases. And one of my mentors went to his course, and he had 3 patients and 3 corneas ready to go. And he ruined 2 of the corneas and only was able to transplant 1 of the patients that day because it's so difficult to do the preparation. It's been actually one of the biggest developments is now the iBanks. There have been a few techniques in stripping the graft I won't go into, but the iBanks are now doing it. So you centralize the preparation, and they actually pre-prepare the tissue and send it to us. We still have to do some manipulation once we get it, but if it's going to fail, then you don't already have the patient there in surgery and have to reschedule and take them home. So I almost always know when they ship the tissue to me it's going to do well. I wish I had 2015 data, because when I went to the Midwest Cornea Society meeting just over a year ago, February of last year, all of us were just starting to do DMEC at that group. And I would say 80% of my endothelial replacements are now DMEC. You know, in the country, this data still suggests 11% there, but that's, I believe, old data. My guess is it's closer to 25 or 30%. And these are challenging surgeries, but they are amazing how quickly they clear and how well these patients do. And I think we're going to see, now that the iBanks are preparing them, that was the stress, is that you'd get in surgery and have a tissue tear and you'd have problems. And you can still damage the tissue. I still tell the anesthesiologist to be sure to check the patient's blood pressure, but not mine, because those grafts are really quite delicate to work with. But it's the iBank has made a big difference there. This is what they look like on our anterior segment imaging. See how much thicker that graft is. The DMEC graft here, you couldn't even see, except there's a very slight separation at the edge of it. And they're even a little hard to detect sometimes at the microscope that the patient has even had surgery done. So it's a very physiologic way to replace what's damaged. Can we go to the video? Unfortunately, the frugality of McKay Surgery Center prevents me from showing you my own surgical videos because we don't have the capacity to videotape them, so I can get photographed. So this is another surgeon on YouTube that he deserves quite a bit of credit. Actually, he came up with the glass injector, so I've used his video. So first, this patient was combined with cataract surgery. There's already been a lens implanted into the capsular bag there, and we mark the area to remove. So you're only removing about the central 8 millimeters of decimase membrane. You score it first. You don't want to go too deep up into the stroma, because if you scratch it, it can interfere with the new graft adhering. Then you kind of swirl it towards the center. There's different techniques to get these off. I actually have a little forceps that I like to use to remove it. But once you've removed that decimase, if the graft doesn't take, they go from low function to no function, and they really swell. So you have to, at this point, you're past the point of no return. You have to find a way to fix that cornea once you've removed their diseased cells. Now we're making a peripheral iridotomy. We have to leave gas in the eye, and fluid drains out of the eye through the trabecular meshwork. The gas can block that and cause a really high pressure in the eye with, it's a pupillary block, and that's why we make that little opening. We actually have to stain the graft because it's very, very hard to see. So this is a tripan blue stain that then you kind of dry away. And this is a punch, so we only want the central 7.5 millimeters. This is the edge that he's stripping off there. And you see how thin that is as you peel it up. It's very, very thin, very delicate. And now, if you pull that right up, it'll often tear. You actually have to strip it underwater. That was one of the biggest, it has to be under actually salt solution. If you strip it underwater, it'll kill the cells. But you strip it under balanced salt solution and lift it up very, very delicately. And then you stain it for about 3 or 4 minutes so that you can see it in surgery. So you have this delicate graft. And then you put little drops, and just watch how it'll unfold and move and scroll. That is just such a delicate little graft, and it's just in a tiny little bath. This injector has made a huge difference. Plastic kills those cells, but they discovered glass doesn't. So this glass injector has been a massive change, because you got to figure out how to get in. And you just inject the tissue into the anterior chamber. A lot of these take quite a while, and if you're not careful, it'll just shoot right back out. So he's adjusting the pressure of the eye there, because if the eye's pressurized, as you come out of the wound, the graft will just follow you. So you've got to be very careful of that. And then you center it. And then it usually takes quite a bit longer than that to get unrolled and centered, but I chose one that was a little quicker just so you could see it. And then you put this gas bubble in, you leave a full air fill for about 10 minutes, and then at the end of 10 minutes, you adjust the air bubble size, and then it's a 20% SF6 gas, 80% air, it's all filtered, and the patient is just a one suture transplant. So that's all you need is one 10-0 nylon. And the patient needs to lay flat on their back for 3 or 4 days, and the recovery is remarkable. So let's go back to the PowerPoint, please. Thank you. It used to be there were only 2 eye banks in the country that prepared these. So all of the donor tissue I use, almost all of the donor tissue I use, comes from the Utah Lions Eye Bank. Because corneas can be stored for up to a week before a transplant, you can actually share around the country, though. And so they would actually harvest the donor tissue and ship it to Oregon to get prepared and then ship it back. But the eye bank in Salt Lake just asked me to start using tissue they'd prepared. They said, do you mind being our guinea pig surgeon? I said, well, we'll work on it. And they're doing a good job preparing it. So we actually have it prepared locally. So again, this is a lot of stroma, just layers of collagen, only a very thin layer that you're replacing. DALK is the opposite. You're literally only leaving that layer behind, and you transplant everything else. The reason this hasn't caught on, the skeptics say in the US they pay you about 80% as much, even though the surgery takes 2 to 3 times as long, because they say, well, you're not transplanting all the corneas, so you shouldn't get paid the full amount. But, and it actually has some traction internationally. The main reason that this hasn't caught on as much is that advantages aren't as great. You still have all the astigmatism problems. You still have the hard contact problem. It's still 12 to 18 months to heal. But I believe the eye is stronger when you, and there's case report level evidence to support that. When people have gotten hit in the eye, their graft has popped off, but this single 15 micron layer is reasonably strong at its edges when it's connected in the recipient. And some of these patients have saved their eye. They didn't have that expulsive hemorrhage because you maintained a layer. You often have to convert to full thickness because these are very difficult dissections. And if you leave too much stroma, they end up hazy. So I would say when I do a patient that's a candidate, there's probably a third to maybe even a half that you have to convert to full thickness because they had a prior scar you didn't know that you couldn't dissect around. So DLK, I was just showing there that really still hasn't gotten a lot of traction. It's still only 3% of grafts. I like doing it though when I can. Keratoconus, is the condition that's most commonly done for now, and it's also done for a condition that's very similar, but it's caused by LASIK called post-LASIK ectasia. Here's a normal cornea. Here's one that's bulged because it's weakened. It's kind of buckled. What's even more exciting than transplant developments, though, for these patients is our preventive treatment now. We have something called collagen cross-linking where we actually remove the surface cells of the cornea, drip riboflavin to soak into the cornea, and then use an ultraviolet light, which makes it kind of glow, and it adds covalent bonds between the collagen layers, and the cornea ends up stiffening and you don't have as much buckling. It doesn't give you a lot of improvement, but it slows progression. This collagen cross-linking was developed by Theo Seiler in Dresden, Germany 20 years ago. It's been available in Europe with very large, fairly well-done studies for 15 years, but the FDA has really dragged their feet on it because it's hard to show improvement on something that's stabilizing a condition. It was just FDA approved finally, which is great. At one of our meetings, 90% of the cornea specialists present voted that this was the standard of care, even though it wasn't FDA approved. So it was very unusual. But together with improved contact lens technology, a lot of patients were able to not have to have a transplant at all with the front of the eye conditions. Trauma, you know, I had a guy put needle nose pliers through his cornea, through his iris, through his lens, into the vitreous, and we had to do a reconstruction of the whole front of his eye. There's no way around surgery in some of these patients, but many of the patients were able to avoid surgery now. So in conclusion, endothelial keratoplasty is definitely here to stay. I don't know, I don't think anybody put money on that journal club, but they're wrong. The DMEC graft is growing in popularity. The jury's still out on the deep anterior lamellar, and collagen cross-linking is an exciting way to reduce the risk of progression in these other conditions. Thank you. For any questions, or I think I'm out of time. But.
A quick question. Is there any advances for patients who suffer from NION and blindness?
From?
NION, NAION.
Not clinically available. So she's asking about non-arteritic ischemic optic anterior optic neuropathy. So optic nerve, anything we can do for the optic nerve is prevention. And glaucoma, that's huge. That's the main reason the Academy of Ophthalmology says everybody over 65 should have an eye exam. I see a lot of people with severe nerve damage that's totally preventable if they just get an eye exam. We could prevent a lot of this, but not non-arteritic ischemic optic neuropathy. Some of them are associated to Viagra use and blood pressure drops, but most of these are just a patient that has an optic nerve that's ready to, it's essentially like the lenticulostriate vessels. The optic nerve blood vessels can just have a little mini stroke, if you will, and that's what that is, and there really isn't a good way to replace nerve tissue. In the lab, there's actually quite a bit of research going on with stem cell therapy. And the last person I heard who was closely involved with it was about 7 or 8 years ago said we were at least 20 years out from anything in trials. I don't know if there's anything more recent than that. It's
a good question. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure.